Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hi, everybody. We are very happy to have the chairman and CEO of the MTA, Joe Loda, as our first guest today. He will take your calls on the four options now on the table for raising bus and subway and commuter rail fares, bridge and tunnel tolls, too. And we'll talk about the state of transit generally, so vital to both our comfort and our economic growth. Our phone number, if you want to talk to Chairman Loda, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Mr. Loda, we really appreciate you coming on for this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, thank you. It's great to be back here.
And, of course, I have to ask you first, why the whole exercise that we're starting now assumes that another round of fare and toll hikes is necessary? People will ask, didn't we just do this? And isn't inflation for most things close to zero these days?
Well, Brian, back in 2009, there was a bailout rescue for the MTA. All of its various different funding that was coming from Albany really deteriorated because of what had happened in the marketplace. Most of the very, very economically sensitive taxes were down considerably. As part of that bailout, there was a combination of Governor Patterson, as well as Speaker Silver, and then Majority Leader John Sampson. They decided that they would put so much back, but then also say that the MTA would embark on biennial or every two-year fare increases. So that's what we're focused on right now, a fare increase that everybody had thought would start on January 1, 2013. I pushed it back to March 1. That's as far as I could possibly push it back so it wouldn't negatively impact our financial situation. Here's what I can tell you about our financial situation. I am doing everything I can to reduce the costs at the MTA. Not a day goes by when I don't focus on further reductions, further efficiency, while at the same time trying to enhance and increase service, which is what we announced just a few months ago, that we were able to reduce costs to a point. I've also taken the costs and put them into two categories. There are costs that I call discretionary, those that I absolutely can control, I can enhance, I can cut, I can actively participate in what happens to them. And then there are the non-discretionary costs, pensions, health care. And there are some things we can do with them. But those non-discretionary costs are growing at 3 and 4 times the rate of inflation.
Basically labor costs you're talking about?
No. Actually, I actually hold the the payment to our workers as discretionary, not non-discretionary. But the pension side of it, the MTA board and the MTA management aren't even allowed to negotiate it under state law. It's the MTA benefits, the benefits that are provided pension-wise to our workers are actually given by the state legislature. And I don't even have the opportunity to negotiate that. That being said, we've redone our health care plan. We've gone out and through an RFP process to reduce our costs, and we're doing all that. But the most important part of it is right now our discretionary costs for 2012 are coming in just about what we spent in 2011. And I don't think you can find a governmental entity in the country that'll say that their costs haven't gone up year over year. So I'm doing my job. But part of it is, you know, when you see these costs running out of control, I just the only choice is to look and see what we can do. You should know that when you look at our cumulative non-discretionary cost, 1/3 will be borne, or the cost of that will be paid for by our riders. 2/3 will be paid for continued reductions and various different revenue streams that were coming in.
Reductions meaning less service still to come?
No.
Oh, reductions in expenditures.
Reductions meaning reductions in expenditures. One of the things that I have to do, and I did it when I was city budget director, and I'm continuing it here at the MTA, is try to find to basically do more with less. Now, I know that phrase doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of people, and it annoys me at times as well. But what I need to do is find a better way to do things, and while enhancing the service, reducing the cost of what it means to provide that service.
MTA Chairman Joe Loda with us. And let's look at some of these choices. Many of our listeners have heard some about this. Some have not. And let's start with the city buses and subways. The four scenarios you laid out involve different emphases on raising either the base fare from $2.25 to $2.50, ending or reducing the multiple fare discount on paper ride Metro cards, or raising the fares most on the weekly and monthly unlimited cards. And it looks to me like in recent days you've been expressing an inclination to raise the base fare. Is that right?
I think it would be wrong to say that. I think reporters all want me to say what I want to do one way or the other way. Here's what I want to do. I want to listen to the public. We start our hearings 2 weeks from now after the election, and it'll go on all throughout the MTA region for almost over a two-week period, and listen to the public and listen to what they have to say. My job is to always convince them that we have no choice but to raise it. I mean, there will be a lot of people who will say, you know, there should be no fare increase. There are a lot of people who actually have come up to me on the streets and have said they shouldn't pay anything. It should be free. So I'll have to deal with that compendium. So what we decided to do is to show basically two separate sets of proposals that turned out to be four different alternatives. And the reason why I said two is let's take the base fare. Base fare is currently $225. What happens to the discounted fares if you keep it at $225? What happens to the weekly? What happens to the monthly? What happens to the paper ride or the bonus fare? And then look at those scenarios. And then on the other side of it, say, okay, what if we increased it from $225 to $250? And then also, again, what happens to those discounted rides that you get on the weeklies and the monthlies and the bonus fare? Now, what's important is, and I think I might have sent you the statistics, and it's online. If you go to mta.info, you can actually look at the statistics. When you look at the number of rides we have overall, basically only 15% of our riders pay $2.25. 85% of our riders use the discounted rate. The bulk of them use the bonus card, almost 40%, and the remainder, again, also almost 40%, either having a 30-day or a 7-day
pass.
And
one of those stats from what you sent me that might be clear to a lot of listeners is that since 1996, the base fare has gone up 50%, but the revenue that the MTA gets from fares has only gone up 18%. Do I have that number right? So that's an indication of or maybe I'm misinterpreting one of the graphics that you sent me.
That doesn't sound familiar to me. Show me where you are.
I don't want to bore the listeners. I'll find the piece of paper. Maybe it's wrong. But looking at some of these options and what they would mean, you have a scenario that would keep the base fare at $225 and hike the monthly Metro card from $104 now to $125.
Right.
So a bigger hit on those folks.
So
an argument would be, if presumably monthly buyers have more ability to absorb an increase while the base fare is paid by more lower income people, why not look at the monthlies?
Quite honestly, 61% of people who make $25,000 or less buy the weeklies and monthlies. So that you really can't focus on saying that the weeklies and monthlies are actually purchased by folks of higher economic means. It's just that our statistics don't bear that out. One of the things, let's talk about these proposals for a second, Brian. They actually represent parameters or extremes at a high end and at a low end. So when you look at the proposal of maintaining the fare at $225 and the potential of increasing the 30-day pass to $125, that is the outside limit. And I can't imagine it would ever. The scenarios that we have in front of us for our board are within this parameter. I think what you're looking at here with these four charts, what will be selected by the board will be something that's not on this chart but somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that's This is here to engender a public debate, a public discussion. One of my beliefs, and everybody has a different definition of what is transparency, I actually believe transparency requires the public to participate in the decision-making process. So the point of having these four proposals is to lay out a high end and a low end and a couple of different scenarios so that the public can engage in that discussion and have something to talk about, latch on to, and say what works, what doesn't work.
So let's take a call from Jeff in Brooklyn to start us out, who I think has an opinion on which way to lean in these scenarios. Jeff, thank you very much for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me. I definitely think that the people who ride monthly might not be able to absorb the cost as much because they rely on public transportation to get to and from work, whereas perhaps the daily riders would be better able to do that in the sense that a lot of tourists probably use that, and a lot of people who are going day to day don't necessarily rely on the subway to get them to and from work every day.
Well, Jeff, great to hear from you. You know, one of the things that you've talked about is the fact, you know, the folks who purchase the monthly pass are our core riders. They really are. When you look at the statistics and you look at how many people buy a monthly pass, almost 31%. Those who buy the bonus pass, about 38%. The significant majority of our riders look at the seven-day pass and the monthly pass as the way in which it's the best way to use the subway and the bus system. And you should also understand these passes are unlimited. You can take as many rides as you want during that either seven-day or 30-day period. What is also important, I believe, to understand is that every economic class, every single economic class uses the seven-day pass and the 30-day pass. The thing that I believe the MTA must do once they come to a decision is to start a marketing campaign and an education program. The fact that we have people who are paying the base fare would then have an opportunity to get a discount with the bonus fare. A lot of folks that I talk to, and this is pure anecdotal information, they don't understand it. I don't think it's overly a complex way in which we sell our tickets, but people shouldn't be buying them one at a time. I want to be able to start an education program, use videos, use social media, use Twitter, and do various different things to educate the public. I think we will be prepared to do that once the board of the MTA comes to a decision.
Dean in Suffolk County, you're on WNYC with MTA Chairman Joe Loda. Hi, Dean.
Hi, how are you? I'd like to know how much the MTA's budget is subsidized by tolls in on the bridges and tunnels. And as folks who aren't elected at the MTA but rather appointed to a quasi-governmental corporation, how is that decision-making process made to appropriate funds between car riders and public transportation riders?
Thank you, Dean. That's a great question. It also gets into some of the other choices that you're facing. We talked about the New York City buses and subways and those fares, but obviously the MTA also encompasses the commuter rails of Metro North and the Long Island Railroad and the bridges and tunnels within the city, right?
It does. And, Dean, that is a very, very good question. And the decision on how it's split is not made by the appointees at the MTA. The decision's actually been made through legislation. Currently, the surplus after your payment of debt service at the Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority, or what we now call the Bridges and Tunnel Division, is about $500 million, $500 million. The split, and I'm going to give you exact numbers, exact split, but it's pretty close. It's 50-50 between the subways and buses and the commuter rails. And between the two commuter rail lines, it's again split 50-50 between the Long Island Railroad and Metro North. That's determined in Albany. That has been the case for almost since it started. This started happening sometime in the late 1960s, and it really hasn't been changed since then.
And you have toll hike scenarios, too, in the current proposals?
We do have toll hike scenarios, a dollar increase on the one-way fares on our major bridges. It becomes quite controversial with Staten Island, where Staten Island doesn't have a one-way fare. Everything they do is two ways based on federal law that was passed that we can only collect in one direction.
So I think part of Dean's question, and since he's in Suffolk County, it sounds like he's primarily a driver, who subsidizes whom, in your opinion? Do New York drivers subsidize transit riders, or do transit riders subsidize drivers? You can get a good head of steam going on either side.
There's no doubt. You go back and look at the discussion, the public discussions in the 1960s about when the MTA was created. It was, believe it or not, the very first discussions in the state of New York about congestion pricing. And it was determined by the leadership at that time that drivers should be subsidizing the mass transit systems on the commuter rail side as well as on the subway side. That was a political decision that was debated in the 1960s, and it was the very, very beginning of congestion pricing. The federal government also believes that, too, that most tolls around the country go far beyond paying for the roads. They go to pay for transit and mass transit and alternative ways of driving. It's a controversial issue. I grant you that. But I always get a chuckle when people start talking about congestion pricing as if it's a new idea. It's implemented in New York State. It's over 40 years old.
Sarah in Brooklyn calling in about the subway fare. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi. I've changed my decision on which kind of increase I would like because ever since they closed down my nearest subway station, which is the Knickerbocker stop, on the M line. And I wanted to know, how do you decide which when you're improving the various stops, which ones get elevators? Because the neighborhood that is served by the subway has the highest number of disabled people and people who have trouble walking, the highest number of people who get straight Medicaid, which would be impoverished disabled people, and who really need an elevator. And so our subway stop has been stopped until February, and we're getting art with the improvement. And I went to art school, so I like to see artists
and
work.
And so did you say, Sarah, that this situation is influencing which scenario of fare hikes you favor?
Because when the subway was open and it was the closest one to me, I would get the monthly ticket and use the subway a lot. And it was wonderful that the M line was rerouted, so it went into Manhattan. I could get into Manhattan much more, and I was buying the monthlies and using it. Now I have to walk so far. They sent me either to the Central Avenue stop, which after I climb 50 or 60 steps to get up
there. So you're just not using the subways as much as you did before.
Yes.
Right. And Sarah, I'm going to leave it there to get a response. And I don't know how much you take into account people like Sarah, for whom using the subways is to some degree discretionary. She's obviously not tied to it to get to work every day.
This answer could be it's a great question, first off. And Sarah, thank you for using the subway system, and thank you for caring about it. Shutting down and closing a subway stop for repairs and maintenance, let's step back for a second and try to understand one thing. If I was to design the subway system today, if we were all to design it, it would look a lot different. Our subway system was actually designed in the late 19th century. It opened up in 1904. The youngest part of the subway is 70 years old. Clearly, long before the American with Disabilities Act. And so when we look at renovating stops, and determining, we follow the federal guidelines, and the federal guidelines say that if we're going to renovate more than 20% of a station, we must make it accessible for those who are disabled. I don't know the specifics about your stop in Brooklyn on the M line, but you know, as you said, it will open up again in February once whatever work is being done. What's really important to also understand is ever since the subway system opened in 1904, it's been open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You won't find another transit system in North America. You'll only find maybe one in the rest of the world that's open that long. And I think that other one actually happens to be in Moscow, and service in Moscow is totally incomparable to what the great service we have here in New York. That said, though, it's very hard to maintain this system as old as it is, 70 years old being the youngest part. And so occasionally we do have to shut it down. I really apologize for that inconvenience. What I need to look at, is why wasn't bus service put in place to help you get to a better stop? The whole point of during the 1990s when the city and the MTA went to one city, one fare in its approach is so that you could take a bus and transfer it to the subway at no additional cost. And so I think that's an important part of it as well, combining both our land-based and rail-based systems.
I have an idea. How about a soak the tourists option? Sell Metro cards at hotels and tour bus companies for $3 a ride with a special 10-trip pass for $40 and see if anybody notices.
Is that your question or did somebody tweet that to you?
That's my question.
That's your question.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
Seriously,
talk to George Fertitta at NYC and Company, the guy who tries to induce tourists.
They will love that. I don't know if people think about the subway fares when they're deciding which city to take their vacation in, but that's another discussion.
You know, if you go to Europe, you know, you have an entrance fee when you go to most countries in Europe. We don't have anything like that in this country. We don't have anything like that in this city. The engagement on tourism has become so critically important to the economy of New York. I know you can walk around anywhere. I live in Brooklyn. When I walk around in Brooklyn, whether it's in Dumbo or Williamsburg on the weekend, I am amazed at the number of tourists who are now coming here who are enjoying not just Manhattan and not just the Fifth Avenue side of the world. They're really getting into it. They're really trying to understand the way New Yorkers live and work.
Everywhere. Down here, Hudson Square, you can't get a hotel room here. You have a formal comment period, including public hearings all around the MTA region. We'll say this again near the end of the segment, but from the Brooklyn Marriott at the Brooklyn Bridge to Baruch College in Manhattan, Hostos Community College in the Bronx, to the Hilton Garden Inn at the Stewart Airport in Newburgh, to Farmingdale State College on Long Island, to the Yonkers Public Library. I wanted to mention some of those specific locations. Do people really get their say at these things, or is it just theater?
So I've never attended one before because I've only been in the job for just about 11 months now. But I will tell you that everybody who's been to them before, they've all told me we stay there until the last one speaks and gets their word across. And I've been told for the ones in Manhattan and the ones in Brooklyn, be prepared to see the wee hours of the morning. You know, in addition, Brian, we're doing something different besides the actual public meetings that we're hosting all throughout the region. We're having four video sites where if people who cannot come to the actual public hearings, they can go to any one of the four video sites in Manhattan, Hicksville, Poughkeepsie, and Ronkonkoma and actually provide that data. That information will be provided to each one of the members both as a video and transcribed so that their point of view can get across.
When we continue in a minute, we'll take more calls, and I want to take a deeper look at transit funding, including how it's become a hot potato that the state and the city and the federal government and the taxpayers keep trying to toss to the next guy, as we continue with MTA Chairman Joe Loda, 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with MTA Chairman Joe Loda. By the way, I see you are quite the tweeter, and not just on transit either. You've got your column. Now that Twitter has come in, I don't know if you always wanted to be a newspaper columnist, but you've got your outlet. You like tweeting?
Actually, let's talk about the newspaper columnist. You know, I was an editor of a high school newspaper. I was involved in my college newspaper. I've always enjoyed writing, and I've always enjoyed journalism. I've always enjoyed that. And, you know, quite honestly, yes, maybe someday when I retire, I can write a column. But, you know, I started with Twitter only to watch what was going on politically here in New York City and in Albany and Washington. And then just someday I just said, you know what, I'm going to respond. And once you start, you start. But, you know, it's not an MTA-related site. And I try to tell everybody, if you want to talk about, you know, a problem at your station, we have a separate site to go to. Most of mine are personal. And
if people want to hear what you're thinking about as a human being, at Joe Loda.
Be careful.
and you tweeted, yeah, I don't know if you want to mention this, but it's interesting to me. You used to be a Madison Square Garden official, and I think you tweeted a response to a Wall Street Journal article yesterday having to do with whether Islanders fans would come in from the island to see the Nets in Brooklyn. If you want to talk about that, or what do you think in general as somebody who used to work for the Garden of the whole Barclays Center development? Does it hurt the Garden, or does it increase revenue for everybody because we become even more of a sports district?
I didn't tweet that. Somebody, I actually responded to a Wall Street Journal columnist, and he tweeted it. But that, nonetheless, okay. Ted Mann tweeted it. I don't think having an additional athletic and entertainment facility in the city of New York is going to diminish the Garden. I actually think it enhances the Garden. It makes distinctions. And try to imagine this. The city of Brooklyn, if in fact Brooklyn was still a city on its own, it's 3 million people. It's bigger than the city of Cleveland, bigger than most other NBA cities. And if they can fill their arenas, I'm sure Brooklyn can fill their arenas. I'm really happy that the Islanders are coming to Brooklyn. I'm a hockey fan. I love hockey. It'll be great. I'll be able to walk to the games and watch it. I will still stay a Ranger fan, however.
I haven't seen yet whether they're going to change their name. You know, technically Brooklyn is part of Long Island.
Right, and their actual name is New York Islanders, and I think it's very appropriate. That's right. Most people should remember that. If you actually go to the Brooklyn Historical Society in Brooklyn Heights and you look up at the building, it's on Pierpont Street, you look up at the building, it actually says the Long Island Historical Society. Ah. It's where it started.
And my producer Lisa just said no, they said they're not going to change their name. So we're focused on different scenarios for fare hikes, and you gave us a chart that has comparisons with other price increases in New York since 1996. A Con Ed bill has gone up 57%. Taxi fare has gone up 70%. A large pizza has gone up 95%. As a sports fan, you don't even want to know what a Yankee ticket has gone up. But the MetroCard, plus 50%. Since 1996, making the point, I guess, that it's at least in line, if not a relative bargain. But I want to move on from there to ask about if you know another stat, and that is the share of MTA expenses paid for by the state of New York. Do you have a stat on how that has changed since 1996?
I don't have it. I don't have it over time. I have it static as to what it is now. And essentially, the revenues that come in from the state of New York in comparison to fares, it's about 50-50. Right now, the combined fare that's brought in, what we call a fare operating ratio, the amount that's brought in by our passengers is actually 51.8%. And I can get back to you how it's gone down over time.
But it has gone down in terms of a state contribution, right?
And actually, let's be fair about this. The amount per rider has gone down. The total amount has actually gone up, but you have to look at it on a per rider basis. And when you do that and you look at it on a per rider basis, it's part of my challenge and part of what I talk about when I go to Albany. New York ranks last of all of the states that have a transportation system, whether it's Illinois or the District of Columbia out in California. The amount of subsidy that comes from Albany per passenger is the lowest of anywhere in the country. And that part needs to get across. My job is to make sure it's the highest. New York should always be number one in everything we do.
So we had, after 2008, when the crisis hit MTA funding as it hit everything, a payroll tax enacted on employers in the MTA service region. Now that's been reduced because it was so politically unpopular, and Governor Cuomo has promised that he would make up the difference from the state's general fund. Here's a short bite of the governor talking about that.
The state will pay dollar for dollar whatever that amount would have been raised by that tax. So the MTA is held totally harmless. We're just shifting the source of those funds.
Is Governor Cuomo, is the legislature keeping that promise, or is it too early to know?
No, they absolutely kept that promise. In fact, the money's in hand. That quote that you just had from the governor was last December.
Correct.
When action was taken to lift some of the thresholds for the payment of the payroll mobility tax. He made that statement. The following month, he put in his budget, when he put out his January budget plan, the full amount, almost $350 million, was included in the budget. The legislature voted on it sometime in March, right before the end of their fiscal year. And that money was included in there. But it wasn't, you know, it was, and it's also included in the four-year financial plan. It wasn't, in, you know, it is subject to appropriation risk in the future. Fully understand that. But the governor's word was kept immediately. And actually, we have received the money.
Are you concerned, though, that when you take away a dedicated funding stream like part of the payroll tax and then leave it up to elected officials year by year, maybe they kept the promise this year, but maybe there'll be a new governor in a couple of years who's going to have a different attitude toward it or a new mix in the legislature, and then you have to fight this battle every January.
If the question is, do I worry about it, yes, it's been added to the list of a lot of things that I worry about. But the fact of the matter is the governor kept his word. That's the most important thing. And he did it so quickly and so swiftly, there was no light in between the decision.
And how about Washington? Here's a clip of Mayor Bloomberg talking about lobbying down there.
I'd like to see if we can't get some help in getting a tax credit for commuters. You know, the highway bill helps you if you drive, but it doesn't help mass transit, and we're very dependent on that.
Do you see that on the horizon as a realistic possibility? And in general, do you think we get our fair share, or is national politics too tilted toward cars and roadways?
Well, there are two different points going on here. The mayor was talking about the credit for commuters. That bill, which was sponsored and pushed by Senator Schumer, did in fact pass. The credit is there. You can actually buy a MetroCard through your employer, through your payroll deduction, with using pre-tax dollars. That is in place up to $150 per month. So we were successful in helping lobby in Washington. But the larger picture of transportation funding, and you need to go back, because when I go to Washington and I talk to the folks in the majority in the House, and I have to deal with all the Republicans, as well as those, the new young Republicans who are part of the Tea Party movement, I'm constantly reminding them that the best and the biggest supporter for mass transit in the 20th century was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, actually, most people say, you know, Ronald Reagan cut a lot of taxes. He did when it came to income tax. But when it came to the gas tax, he took 6 cents from the increase in the gas tax and dedicated it directly to mass transit. And proof of the pudding is he was very instrumental when he was governor of California in building the Bay Area Rapid Transit in the beginnings of what started what's now in L.A. And he continued it because he had that vision of understanding that we cannot be a car-only society. Washington's trying to reverse what Ronald Reagan negotiated with then Tip O'Neill. But it's also to remember that Ronald Reagan, the father of modern-day Republicanism, was very, very much in favor of mass transit.
Antonio in Bayside, you're on WNYC with MTA Chairman Joe Loda. Hello.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a real advocate for mass transit. I love it. I've been to other cities where they have great, you know, like Portland has an awesome streetcar light rail system, and people are really like, they like it, they just like how it looks. And I think if we had a dedicated kind of metro card, kind of dovetail on what the two of you were mentioning, like a marketing campaign, that it's serious. I think if people knew, like, this metro card is going towards to build this, you know, specifics. I mean, people always talk about in debates and things like that that they want specifics. That's specific, and I think you guys were kind of you know, getting to the core of that earlier, but
you want to go right there. And I'm glad you did, because I read that currently the MTA has no funding stream for capital improvements, and we've been talking about operating budgets, for capital improvements beginning in 2015. Is that an overstatement?
No, that's not an overstatement. That's a fact. We work with five-year capital plans. Our five-year capital plan will end in 2014. We're in the process of putting the projects together that'll represent the 2015 to 2019 capital plan. But the big question, we'll have the projects. We'll know what we need to do to repair the existing system we have already and to expand what we need to expand. But the question is one of funding, and that's the next big challenge at the MTA, is to try to figure out exactly where that funding will come from. Now, this happens every 5 years. This is not something new. Remember, Dick Ravitch started this with Governor Carey back in 1982-83, was able to get it forward, and it's rolled forward ever since. It's at the core. This capital plan is at the core of what has changed the New York City subway system and the Long Island Railroad, all of the new cars, the lack of graffiti, everything that's gone on down in this 100-plus-year-old system.
And there are things going on. The Second Avenue subway now being built, causing construction havoc on the east side. But that's funded beyond 2014, isn't it?
The project is not funded beyond 2014. The project is funded till 2014, and then we'll continue beyond.
Continue.
Actually, we do have some money in there for that project that it started before that.
Mm-hmm.
But Second Avenue subway is going to be built in four different parts. The first part should be done in 2016. Then we'll go north to Harlem, and then we'll go south all the way down to Wall Street.
We're almost out of time, but every MTA chief has his capital budget priorities. What would you say are your biggest three?
Well, my first and foremost biggest priority is to expand the system from what we have in place. And what I mean by that, Brian, is that we're experiencing the highest ridership rates that we've had since the 1950s. No matter what time of the day or night you go on the subways, it's pretty full. I'd love to be able to take money and change our signal system. Instead of having trains every 5 minutes, how about every 4 minutes? How about every 3 minutes? To do that is going to require a modern signaling system, because you don't want to do it in a way that's at all dangerous to any of our customers in the process of doing that. And that, I think, is important. The other thing is, how do we take some of the existing subway stops that we have now and make them bigger? We can't make them wider, because if you make them wider, you're going to have to move the tracks. What you need to do is make them longer, similar to what we did on 72nd Street and Broadway and 96th Street and Broadway, where we took the narrow express stops and made them longer. That's really what we have to do. Take this wonderful system that was designed for us by our forefathers and leave it in much better shape for our grandchildren.
One thing in the news right now, I hate to even think about this, but next week we may get a big hit by Hurricane Sandy, which is now down south. But I was listening to the weather forecasting this morning, and they're talking about a fairly strong likelihood that sometime around Monday, this is going to be a significant weather event here. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. But are you already making contingency plans?
Absolutely. I've been on two conference calls yesterday already on this subject and making sure that we're ready and up and running, making decisions about, you know, what we need to do for sandbags. In fact, if we see water coming up in lower Manhattan, how to get our buses to hire. Yes, the planning has started.
I think there were generally good reviews for Hurricane Irene for the decision, though it opened some eyes at first, to shut down the system temporarily before it came. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest lesson you learned from Hurricane Irene?
Well, having been a customer and a rider at the time, what I think everybody at the MTA and everybody in New York learned about Hurricane Irene is that the subway system can do almost anything it's possible of being done. And it did it in a way, quite honestly, the subway system had never been shut down before. Everything put in its place, everything being protected. And it was a good exercise. I don't think we're looking at anything like that for what's happening next week, but we are going to have, for all indications, are a pretty brutal nor'easter. What's going to happen north of New York City is, I think, where the most problems are going to be, because they are talking about the fact that while it may be rain and wind down here, not that far north of us, we're going to be having snow. It's going to be a replica of last year's Halloween snowstorm.
And anything, last thing you want to say to the public about the public comment period that I think officially begins November 7th. Is that the date?
That is the date.
On the various scenarios for fare and toll hikes?
I think the most important thing is participate. I mean, you know, just like I tell everybody who can go vote, I want everybody to come talk to us and tell us, give us your opinion. But also recognize the fact that what most people don't realize, the gentleman who called from out in Bayside, who said he was out on the West Coast and saw what they do out there. New Yorkers really need to fully understand how great the New York City subway and bus system is to go look at what other communities have to do. You know, we as New Yorkers don't like to compare ourselves to others, but I will tell you, we do have the finest transportation system in the world here in the city. And I think the most important thing is how to figure out how to make it even better.
MTA.info.
That's our website. Come visit us.
All right. And leave comments there. And you can see the list that I read some of before of where these public hearings are going to be taking place in November, from Stewart Airport in the north to Staten Island in the south to Farmingdale in the east, et cetera, et cetera. MTA Chairman Joe Loda, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, Newsweek shuts down its print edition. Is that the future of magazines or their death knell? We will get two views.